Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Ask the GP. Dr. Nina Burns, who's a GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic, is with me in studio to answer all of your health questions today. Nina, happy new year.
Happy new year to you too.
Good to see you. 087 1400 106, the WhatsApp number, if you have a question for Nina today. I assume this week back is all colds, flus and the whole lot, is it, in the surgery?
Yeah, well, yeah, so we've been back kind of all the days, but yeah, lots of people with colds and flus, lots of stuff coming in, yeah.
It's the big one. Listener says, I'm a 57-year-old man, not on any medication. I do have lower limb circulation risk, highlighted back 2 years ago. Had my blood pressure checked in the last week by my local pharmacy. I wonder, do the results warrant an appointment with my GP? It's 137 over 86, 160 over 96. What's typical blood pressure, I suppose, for?
So normal blood pressure would mean that they should be less than 140 over 90 for most people. If you're diabetic or something, we actually set the goal a bit lower. So I guess the first one, there was less than 140 over 90, but the second reading wasn't. So, you know, if someone comes in to me and I'm checking their blood pressure and it's up, we'd always do kind of three readings, because often it'll be, especially in a GP surgery, you know, just being there pushes people's blood pressure up. And as you do, a few readings come down. So I say that to people at home, if you check your blood pressure and it's a bit up, then check it again a minute later and a minute later. And if every time you do that, by the second or third one, your blood pressure is within normal, it's quite likely that your blood pressure is normal. But if you have any worries, you can go to a pharmacy, they can check it for you. You can go to your GP. It is important, because high blood pressure doesn't really give symptoms. Mm. And obviously, it's, you know, it's like a pipe. If there's pressure inside it and it's not settling, it's going to burst. So and a burst pipe can be a heart attack or a stroke. So it's important to have that checked.
Yeah. Listeners wondering, Nina, does post-nasal drip cause bad breath? And if it does, how do you get rid of it?
So I suppose the drip in itself doesn't, in that if the stuff dripping is literally just clear sinus secretions, but it can be associated with bad breath, because if you have post-nasal drip, you may have chronic rhinitis, which is kind of chronic hay fever. You can get congestion, and if you get congestion, you can get a buildup of secretions and those bacteria and things in the secretions that can affect your breath. Weirdly, I heard an ENT guy saying once that people with post-nasal drip, he encourages them to drink more fluids, because if you're not drinking enough water, your secretions are a bit thicker. They can be a bit more irritating. So I tend to say that to people as well.
Okay.
But bad breath, there's so many causes. It can be coming from upwards in the sinuses. It can obviously be coming from the mouth, teeth, gums, and it can be coming from the lungs or from the stomach. So bad breath is something to talk to your GP about. A lot of people are kind of embarrassed about it. Always go to your dentist and have a checkup if that's an issue as well. But there are some medical causes of bad breath that we would treat. Yeah.
Listeners had a cough for 2 weeks that they just can't seem to shift. No infection. They feel okay beyond the cough, though. Is there anything they can take or anything they can do to get rid of it?
So I remember being a good piece of advice when I was doing my paediatrics. The consultant specialised in respiratory, and she always said to me, when people are complaining or parents are complaining of a cough, ask the parents, you know, would they be worried about the child if they didn't have a cough? And if the answer is no, and they haven't had the cough for a very long time, then it's probably okay to keep an eye on it. So I sort of tend to say that to adults. If it's a week or two, you have a cough and no other symptoms whatsoever, you know, just keep an eye on it. You could take antihistamines. I think I often recommend taking over-the-counter antihistamine. Can really help if it's a bit of congestion causing it. But any cough going on more than 3 or 4 weeks, even in the absence of any other symptoms, you should definitely go to your doctor about and have it checked.
Listener has a 10-month-old baby, Nina, really struggling to get them to take Calpol or Nurofen. He screams when even he sees the bottle. Any advice on how we might give it to him? He's teething badly and he seems really uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, so some kids like it. Some kids love the taste of it, some don't. So there's two ways. So obviously you can get suppositories. A lot of people don't like the idea of putting something into the bottom, but actually for babies, it works really well. And in other countries, they use suppositories for all kinds of medicines. So you can talk to your pharmacist. They're like little bullets. You just push one up into the back passage till it stays there, and it can be really effective for kids who need it. Another way, and I know it seems really cruel, but, you know, it's a bit like, I think you have people on talking about dogs, but when you give medicine in a child into a syringe, you can just inject it into the side of the mouth and just hold the chin for a second. Holding the chin makes them swallow and it's gone, but you obviously don't want to distress your child doing that. What I would say, though, is remember, you don't have to give Calpol and Nurofen, you know, so while if they seem in a lot of pain, a bit of Calpol might be an idea. But, you know, I'd often say start with things like the chewy things. You know, their gums are irritating them. So the stuff you rub on the gums, the things they can chew on, anything nice and cold, that can help more than any of those
087-1400-106 is the WhatsApp number if you have a question for Dr. Nina Burns this afternoon. Listener has an underactive thyroid. It's been treated with Eltroxin. The past few days, though, they've been having palpitations. Is that likely due to my thyroid levels? I haven't been under any pressure when it happened, or wasn't under any pressure.
So palpitations can be a symptom of an overactive thyroid. And in theory, if your thyroid situation has suddenly changed and you're on too much medicine, you could swing overactive. But obviously there's so many other causes of palpitations. I think if you're having palpitations, which is your heart racing rapidly for a period of time, especially if you're feeling breathless or anything with it, you do need to go and get that checked because there are lots of other reasons.
Another listener with an underactive thyroid, Nina, they only found out or were diagnosed a month ago. They're on, is it Lytroxine? Is that a different type?
Levothyroxine is the generic name for it.
They feel much better. They've more energy. Their voice has gone back to normal, but their weight went up 15 kg in the last year. They were dieting, exercising, weren't losing much weight. I'm hoping now that this will go down, that I'm not on medication and taking supplements. Any advice on losing weight with the condition?
Yeah, so people often think of weight when it comes to underactive thyroid. And yes, it is true. Your thyroid is kind of like the furnace of your body, right? So if it can burn too high and burn too low. And if it's burning too low, that's underactive. So it slows everything down, including your metabolism, which can have an impact on weight. But I do always say to people, having an underactive thyroid treated doesn't always suddenly result in a load of weight loss. And so all the normal things we look at from a weight point of view, the avoiding the processed foods, the kind of, you know, eating regularly. I think I talk quite a lot here about people just getting enough protein to drive their metabolism and stuff. So it's just about the right mix of nutrients, a Mediterranean type diet. It's not too much of anything. But obviously go talk to your doctor. So it may help a little, I suppose, is the answer. Sometimes you need an adjustment of dose to get the thyroid to the right level. You want your TSH, which is one of the bloods, to be less than 2.5. But I can't promise you, unfortunately, that will cause that. And if there is a metabolic issue, I don't know how heavy this person is, but obviously, you know, we have the likes of the GLP-1 agonist injections and stuff that can be really helpful for people who have other risk with their weight as well.
Okay. Listener has got in touch, Nina. Please help. I have LS, skin condition, chronic inflammatory skin condition, and I'm not sleeping at night with the symptoms. Any thoughts or suggestion or advice?
So LS, skin condition.
Is it Lichen's?
Lichen sclerosis.
That's it, yeah.
Lichen sclerosis. So what was the question again? Sorry.
They can't sleep with the symptoms. Any
so they're uncomfortable. So lichen sclerosis, where you get this kind of plaque-like change of the skin, and it can cause itch, particularly if it's in the kind of gynae area, if it's in the vulva and stuff, they can be very uncomfortable. Usually you'd see a dermatologist. They obviously take a tissue sample to confirm what it is. They sometimes will prescribe a low dose of steroids to use for a while. It's not something you should use long term. They do use some immune drugs, like some Protopic and that, which are some of the more autoimmune drugs that we use for skin conditions, can help in some people. So do talk to your doctor. Again, if itch is a feature, taking an antihistamine in general, because it might not be the actual lichen sclerosis is causing discomfort, but more the inflammation around it can help. But do talk to your doctor. It's important that you get sleep, because obviously sleep deprivation is a form of torture.
Yeah. Listener says, I'm really in a lot of pain, incapacitated with plantar fasciitis. I'm using spiky ball to roll on it, stretching it. Anything else I can do to heal it?
Plantar fasciitis is a tough one.
Oh
so
my
it's
God,
when you
I
get
have
into,
it yeah, in no, recent months myself.
Yeah,
it's a
it
nightmare.
Is tough. So classically pain when you put your feet to the floor in the morning and that burning sort of stretching pain. This person's doing all the right stuff. The only thing I would say is it does go away in most people. It does usually settle. It does, most people settle. Very occasionally they will do injections, but they're quite specialised, and so your GP would have to refer you on to somebody. The rolling on the ball and the gentle exercises, physios, you know, there are physios who will kind of help you with that. Probably be the best place to go for that. I wish I had a magic cure. I don't.
Listener has a 9-week-old baby, Nina. She has RSV. She's doing well, but still has a bad cough. We seem to be over the worst part of it. No fever. I'm just wondering, my mum and my other children, they too have had the same symptoms. Now, my mother has an ongoing cough that's very dry. Sometimes it's quite phlegmy as well after her illness at Christmas time. Do you think maybe they possibly too had RSV? Everybody was in contact with us. Is it possible for an older adult in their 60s to catch it? And how do you prevent them from not getting it every year?
So the answer to most of that is yes. RSV can impact other people. The people most at risk are those who are very young and those who are over 60. And there is actually a vaccine for RSV now. So they could talk to their doctor about that. Someone was saying to me that the test kits that you can get for COVID, that some places are actually selling ones that test for flu and for RSV as well.
Okay.
So there are some, when you go to hospitals, they certainly can do a triple test to check which virus you have. Obviously, in the majority of people, it is what we call self-limiting. It's like any virus, they get the cough and they feel a bit unwell, but it settles down. So it's just to manage it. I hope your baby's doing well. I'm glad they got diagnosed and that most of them do recover very well, thankfully. So it sounds like it's getting better.
And just finally, Nina, for the moment, this listener says their daughter's 22 with constant pain. Is it from costochondritis?
Costochondritis.
Yeah, she's on anti-inflammatories, but the pain is constant. Any suggestions on what she could take or do?
So costochondritis is where, you know, your ribs come from your back around the front and there's a bit of cartilage then, and it's where the bone hits the cartilage, chondro being cartilage. It's where you get soreness and tenderness. Taking anti-inflammatories can help. Again, physio, just exercises that work actually the muscles in the middle of the back that help with posture, they can help in some people. Again, it usually is a self-limiting condition, usually goes away. So like they shouldn't be having pain going on for a very long time. If it is, go back and see your doctor, because some people, they splint their breathing, they don't take very deep breaths, and then you are more prone to inflammation in the lungs and stuff. So just to check that out as well.
Okay, Dr. Nina Burns, GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic. You can get more from Nina on X at Dr. Nina Burns, or check out their website at generationhealth.ie. Nina, thanks a million for joining us here.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan, weekdays at midday on News Talk.